everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I am your host today, tomorrow, yesterday, and forever, John Scott. Thank you for joining me here. Another beautiful July day, July 14th. Goodness gracious. I was playing cards with my wife last night, and she goes, gosh, summer's half over. And I did a double take. I was like, no, we just started. We still got a couple more months. And then she broke it down. She's like, no, it's kind of already half over. Got me depressed a little bit, but I wasn't too depressed. We had our daughter's birthday yesterday. Eleanor turned six. Very exciting. We did the party in the weekend. We took the kids to the lake, and that was great. We did a little, you know, impromptu birthday party with a couple of her friends and grandma at the house. That was a lot of fun. And then we have another birthday today. It's funny how our kids work. They go in groups of two. I have two in July, obviously the twins in February. I have two in December. And then kind of two July, August, end of July, end of August. But we group them up in the two. So it's kind of fun. So we do the two July back to back, the 12th to 13th. Birthday, Eleanor, Esther. So Esther gets her birthday today. It's a lot of fun. I'm filming this on the 13th. I'll release it on the 14th. Sue me. But yeah, she's turning four. She likes horses. So we did a little horse themed cake and blah, blah, blah. It's a lot of fun. Birthdays are fun with the girls. We did a movie night last night, where my wife and I were playing cards on the porch. We said, you know what? You guys can stay up. You can watch a movie. They bundled up into the bonus room. They all put down their sleeping bags and stuff, and seven kids on the floor. They watched the old school Flintstones. You guys remember that with John Goodman? It was good. It was good. They seemed to like it. 1994 release. So relatively safe for the kiddos. A couple of promiscuous parts, but at that age, it kind of just goes right over their head. But it was a good night. I beat my wife in cribbage. That's always good. Saw some fireflies outside. All is well. Moving on. The big controversy in the NHL right now, and it's not really a controversy, but it's just more of a ethical, moral situation going on with the Carolina Hurricanes. And is it the right thing to do? So obviously they won the Stanley Cup, their second Stanley Cup as a franchise. But the owner of the team, majority owner, Tom Dundon. And everybody's heard of this story, so I'm not going to delve into it too much. But they win the cup. He's the owner. He gets to make the decision on which names get on the cup. And there are certain rules and stipulations as far as the players go, who gets on the cup, who doesn't get on the cup. You have to play one game in the semifinals or the finals. You automatically get on the cup. You have to play a majority of the games in the regular season. You automatically get your name on the cups. Or some guys who play 38 games, your name doesn't go in the cup. There are some guys who play in the first round, second round. Your name doesn't automatically get on the cup. You have to play a game in the second or third or fourth round, excuse me, to get your name on the cup definitively. Well, they win the Stanley Cup. All those players get their names on the cup. And the owner, Tom Dundon, decides who else gets on the cup. And typically it's all his staff. It's the, you know, the people involved with the team, the people who are associated with the team. And it's been done in years past where the owner puts his wife on the wife's name on the trophy. The Florida Panthers owner, Vince Viola, the last two titles, he puts his wife on the name and his three children as well. But he didn't omit anybody else. The Tampa Bay Lightning owner, Jeffrey Vinnick, he put his wife on, then wife, they are now divorced, on the trophy. And then it's not a foreign concept. But this year, people were up in arms because there was notable omissions. Longtime equipment manager Bob Gorman, with the team for 26 years, never got his name on the cup. Joel Nystrom played 38 regular season games. But the automatic, you have to play 41. The guy plays 38 regular season games, doesn't get his name on the cup because he didn't play any games in the playoffs. So those two names were left off of the cup. And of course, the big thing is it just went Tom Dudden. Then he has his wife's name, Verashuka. Then he has his five children on the cup. Caden, Dax, Drew, Blake, and Tegan. Can we just talk about the names first? Not a huge fan. I don't hate them, but Tegan and Caden, Dax. I know Dax Shepard. I don't know if that's a good role model. All that aside, five kids' names on the cup and your wife and yourself, you're taking up two whole rows on the Stanley Cup when space is at a premium and you have to maximize getting people on the cup and everybody wants to get their name on the cup. Who knows when you win it again? Carolina, in my opinion, won't win it again for a long time. Is this the right thing to do? You know, I wrestled with this. When I first heard about this story, I said, yeah, the guy owns the team. He can do whatever he wants. He pays the bills. He has the risk. If the team takes a dump, he loses money. Well, he doesn't lose because of escrow, but he's the one who is on the hook for everything. He bought the team. He can do whatever he wants. But the more I thought about it, the more I meditated on it, I thought that's a pretty crappy thing to do, especially because in the other situations, when other Stanley Cup owners put their family on the cup aside from their wife, their kids had roles with the teams. Like in the Florida Panthers case, when Vincent Viola put his three kids on the team, they were designated as governors for the team. So they at least had a pseudo kind of title for the team. In this case, like, this guy's kids are young. I think Tagan is 2 and Blake and Drew, they're children. They have no idea what's going on. But I know people want me to go scorched earth on this guy and just say, what a simp, what a cuck, doing this for, I'm guessing his wife pushed him into it or he did it on his own. I don't know. But I think it's fine. I honestly do. I don't see any problem with it. If you have a problem with this, buy a hockey team. Go out and purchase a team for yourself and win a cup, and don't put your kids on the cup. This guy will probably, like I said, only win one Stanley Cup. And he went for it. He said, this is my chance. I've owned this team for a certain amount of years. We haven't won anything. I got the opportunity right now, and I'm making the best of it. So Caden, Dax, Drew, Blake, Tagan, Vereshchuk, all of you are on the cup. I'm sorry to Joel Nystrom. Should have played 3 more games in the regular season. I'm sorry to Bob Gorman. That's kind of crappy. Bob Gorman, longtime equipment manager. That guy's name should have been on the cup. 100%. So that one I feel really bad for. But for everybody else moaning and complaining, and my guys in Slack, I know you're going to be pretty surprised because they thought, oh, this is the time. This is like a typical millennial move, getting, you know, nepotism at its finest. Like, these kids didn't do anything to accomplish this great goal of winning the Stanley Cup. Buy a team, own a team, and then you can do whatever you want. There's 32 guys who own an NHL team. This guy gets to do whatever he wants. And do you think he cares what everybody else says? I don't think so. Owners are finicky people. I've met a lot of different owners during my tenure as an NHL player. You know, James Dolan from the Rangers was a super creep. The worst owner there is. Like, as dumb as a box of rocks. By the way, he just gave his kid, who's 32 years old, I think, the keys to the team. He's now some fancy title, but he's essentially the president of the team. The guy knows nothing about hockey, probably. Talk about nepotism. And then, like, I had great owners, Terry Pegula in Buffalo. Great guy. Give you everything he wants. Like, you want purple socks? You play better with purple socks? He'll get you purple socks. You want tofu? You'll get you tofu. Anything you wanted, he would get it. It didn't translate into success, but just a nice guy, nice family, did whatever he could to help the team succeed. And as it is with family, you don't just throw money at a problem. There's different issues that you have to work out instead of just throwing cash at everything. Cash, cash, cash. I remember when he first took over the Sabres. I'm going on a tangerine now. But he went over to the soccer, the UEFA Cup or whatever it is, those the European League over in Europe, obviously. And he got some nutritionist and he brought him over, hired him away from Manchester United or Chelsea or Arsenal, whatever team he was at. He comes into Buffalo and all of a sudden we go from having a normal NHL practice, normal NHL lifts, to we were wearing heart monitors in practice. They would put the results up on the Jumbotron. So the coach would know in time if you weren't trying. And if you weren't skating hard enough, and you would have to reach a certain heartbeat level, and you'd have to get your just body moving as quick as you could, and they would track your recovery time. And it was just intense and insane what we would do. We'd go in the corner, and we would tap it with our fingers, and that would register as a heartbeat. So we'd be sitting there just in the corner trying to get the heartbeat going, and we would have fun with it because we were a crappy team. And we just sit there and go, holy crap, John's heart's beating at 200 beats per minute. He must be going. And no, he's probably dead because he's having a heart attack. We were, like I said, not a very serious team. And you could tell by our record, we didn't take hockey serious at that point. But anyways, moving on. My final stamp on this is good for Tom. I think he had the chance. He went for it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. If I ever won a Stanley Cup and I was an owner, you better believe I'm leaving off a lot of equipment managers and a lot of scouting staff, because I am loading up that cup with my kids. And I'm going middle names. I'm going confirmation names. I'm going everything. So it's going to be 5 to 6 lines of my family. And then maybe I'll sneak in some players. So just be prepared if I ever somehow own an NHL team, which I probably won't. But, you know, one can dream. Moving on. I was thinking about this coming year, in this past year. Obviously, the Hurricanes win the Cup. It was a strange year. Some powerhouse juggernaut teams that are typically in the Stanley Cup Finals and vying for Stanley Cups and just essentially dynasty-type teams did not make the Stanley Cup Finals. Did not make the Stanley Cup playoffs, excuse me. And there are some teams who flamed out too early, and there are some teams that are retooling. And I'm going to focus on the Eastern Conference today. We'll do the Western Conference at another time because the offseason is a time for retooling. It's a time to sit back if you're a GM and look at your team and say, where are we going? Where is the trajectory of our team? Are we a contender? Should we go all in? Like a team like the Chicago Blackhawks. Kyle Davidson sat back and he said, you know what? Last year, we had a hell of a year. We made massive strides. We went from 32nd to 30th. The sky is the limit for us in Chicago. So we need to maximize this momentum and we need to trade our draft pick, number 4 overall. And we never get a good pick at number 4. Historically, number 4 sucks. Ever heard of Cale Makar? Neither have I. He was drafted 4th overall. So we're going to gas that pick and we're going to get Bowen Byram. We're going for it. And that made me think, what other teams went for it? And one of the teams scaled back and looked at their roster and said, you know what, maybe not the time. So I'm going to focus on a couple teams. The first one is the Washington Capitals. You know, 2 years ago, they went for it. They saw the window for Alex Ovechkin was closing, and they wanted to maximize that. A lot of people said, oh, you're just trying to get him the goal-scoring record. That was a part of the piece. But another part of the piece was, we're retooling. You know, gone are the days of Nicholas Backstrom and Kuznetsov and TJ Oshie. Those guys are gone. We have to build this roster around somebody else. We got Dylan Strome. We got some other good young players. But we still got the great eight. We still got Ovi. So that team retooled. They get a Matt Wah. They get a Chychrun. They get a Pierre-Luc Dubois. They get a Mangiapane. And all of a sudden, it's Washington Capitals team that was kind of in limbo. Where are we going to go? Now, they're a playoff contender. They're a Stanley Cup contender. It didn't work out. They didn't win the Cup. But they went for it. Last year was a down year. Fast forward to now. In the offseason, they go, well, what kind of team are we? Who are the Washington Capitals? They still have those good young players, like I mentioned before. They still have a solid back end with Erasmus Sandin and the Wah and the Chychrun and this and that. And they still got good forwards up front. They got the massive Protas brothers. Who are we going to be? Are they going to take a step back and regress and miss the playoffs again? Or do you kick the can again? Well, they went for it. Full on went for it. The GM went out and they get Alex Tuck from the Buffalo Sabres. I watched a lot of Buffalo Sabres hockey this year, and Alex Tuck arguably was their second best player after Tage Thompson. Maybe third best after Rasmus Dahlin, but just an impactful forward who does everything right on the ice. He's one of those guys who just kind of glides effortlessly around the ice, and he does so at such a large size. I think he's 6'4", 6'5". Yes, he kind of flamed out in the playoffs, and he really didn't do anything in that final series versus Carolina. And it's not Carolina, it's Montreal. He didn't do anything to help his cause in Buffalo during that series. But in the regular season, this guy was fantastic. Like, he did everything they asked him to do and more. He was their guy. If you need a goal, if you need a pass, if you need a face-off draw, he was the guy they put in there. And the Buffalo Sabres tried to re-sign him. Couldn't get it done. They trade him to the Washington Capitals. He turns around and signs an 8-year, $84 million contract right away with the Washington Capitals. Well, he actually signed it with Buffalo. Then he got traded. It was a sign-and-trade deal. So they get Alex Tuck. They get a first-line guy. They retool. They now got Dylan Strome, Alex Tuck, and potentially Alex Ovechkin. We'll see where Alex Tuck slides, if he's on the left side, if he's on the right side. They were not done. Another big fish that was out there was Jordan Kyrou. Now, the St. Louis Blues are one of these fascinating teams that have just massively high-end talent. When you look at this roster for St. Louis, you go, how are they not successful? How is this team not a perennial Stanley Cup contender? Because they have everything you would think you would need to make a deep run in the playoffs. But for whatever reason, they always come out of the gate slow, then they have that late push, and then it just flames out at the end. They got Robert Thomas, who I think is the most underrated centerman in the NHL. This guy is a superstar, and he's just hiding in plain sight in St. Louis. They have a decent back end. That Philip Roberg's really good. They got the young kid Logan Mailloux, Colton Parenko, who was going to go to Buffalo, but nixed the trade at the last minute. They have a should I say a decent goalie? I'm not going to even go there with the goaltending situation, but they obviously had Jordan Binnington, but this is a good team. They have some good pieces. It hasn't worked out. So what do? You have to switch things up, and Washington sees an opportunity and they go out and they pitch him a deal and they get Jordan Kyrou. They have to give up Connor McMichael, Milton Gastrin, and a first round pick. And we know first round picks are absolutely garbage unless they're in the top 10. Unless you're the Chicago Blackhawks and you need a top 2 pick. Every other pick after that is garbage. You just get rid of it, throw it away. But you get Jordan Kyrou, a player who has perennially been a speedster. The guy is an absolute star in this league. So if you're looking to retool your team, Alex Ovechkin leaving, how do we do this? Who's the next guy who's going to take the reins? This guy is a solid, lock it in, not quite a point per game guy, but just under the threshold. You pair him up with a Dylan Strome, this guy's going to be special. So they go out and get him. What else? We're not done. We played this guy for years and years and years, Boone Jenner. The heartbeat of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Like just a meat and potato, not even a poor man's Adam Lowry from Winnipeg, maybe even better than Adam Lowry. Not as tough, not as physical, but darn near close and better offensive instinct. You get him. You sign him to a 4-year deal after he had 13 seasons with the Columbus Blue Jackets. He was their captain, for Pete's sake. So he instantly just gives you a player who can play up and down the lineup. I know that's very cliche, but this guy can play first line. He can play fourth line. He plays in every facet of the game, power play, penalty kill. But he brings that a tangible element of leadership. And I know this team doesn't need it because they've been there. A lot of these guys have won a Stanley Cup and they have just credibility oozing from them. But it's always good when you can bring in a guy like this who has just, he is that guy. And if you are around guys like this, you just know his work ethic is going to be spot on. His locker room etiquette is going to be spot on. He's not going to do anything to embarrass the franchise. You can put him out there when you need someone to just settle us down. He's like a Nick Foligno. That's the type of guy you're getting. And of course, they get Vinny Desharnais, a defenseman, adds him to the mix. He'll play alongside maybe Sandin when he gets back and he's healthy from his knee? I think he got a surgery on at the end of the season. But all of a sudden, this Washington team that had a down year and their depth was in question and where do we go from here? You look at this roster and you go, this team might win the Stanley Cup. And I know that's kind of cliche and just thrown out here. And yeah, I know it's July. But when you look at this roster and the way it's made up, there is no weakness on this roster. There really isn't. Their goaltending is locked in. You know, I'm a huge Logan Thompson fan, massive Logan Thompson fan. And Charlie Lindgren is a very, very good backup goaltender. I played with him somewhere. And he's a really good, solid backup goaltender who can play 30 games and just be lights out. He can be the starter if you need him for a little bit. But Logan Thompson, I think he's a terrific goaltender. That was a steal when they got him from the Vegas Golden Knights. Their back end, Chychrun, arguably, again, one of the most underrated defensemen there is. The guy puts up points. He's solid defensively, 1A power play specialist, and he's a lockdown, shutdown defenseman when you put him with Matt Roy. Those two guys are dynamic. Vinny Desharnais, don't love him. The young kid, Cole Hudson's going to come in and just be dynamic. And then Rasmus Sandin comes back. It's going to be a pretty solid top six they got there. And then when you get to the forwards, gone are the days when it was just top heavy. It's like, oh, we got Dylan Strome, we got Ovechkin, and that's about it. And Tom Wilson. And then it's kind of thin after that. They can roll out 2 to 3 really solid scoring lines. And then one line that's just like, do you want to play against this line? If they do pair up Tom Wilson, Alexei Protas, and Boone Jenner, like I hope they do, which line in the NHL wants to play against those guys? That's a pretty physical, solid, scary line for any defenseman out there. It's like, shit, my head is definitely on a swivel when those guys are out there. And they have some scores. There's help for Alex Ovechkin. He doesn't have to score 30, 40 goals. Jordan Kyrou scores. Alex Tuck scores. Dylan Strome obviously scores. There is more than one or two or three guys who can put the pucks in the net with this team. And Ryan Leonard had a great sophomore outing. He's a solid, solid NHL player. So when you look at this roster, Justin Sourdough, Anthony Beauvillier, there was no weakness. You have a little bit of everything. You got physicality. You got high-end goal scoring. You got character players. What's not to like? And you have a great coach in Spencer Carberry who seems to know the pulse of this team. So Washington, seeing what Carolina did and going, we could do that. You're telling me that we have a chance and we don't have to just play second fiddle to the teams in Florida? That ain't bad. So they went for it, and kudos to them. I think they got great value in Alex Tuck. I think they got great value in Jordan Kyrou. I think they won both of those trades. Speaking of teams in Florida, Florida Panthers. Obviously injury riddled this past season, coming off the Stanley Cup and another Stanley Cup, and just, I think, worn out, and it showed. And they just kicked the can down the road. They made some moves at the deadline. They traded people they didn't want, and they just made moves to kind of retool their team. They got rid of Sergei Bobrovsky. And then the big move they made was bringing in Brady Tkachuk. I think, you know, Brady obviously fell out of favor in Ottawa. That's the podcast he does with his brother. What is it called? Like the Wingman? I've honestly never seen it. I'm not throwing shade. I've just never seen him. I'm not a big hockey podcast guy. And he said some things about Linus Ullmark and in the locker room, and there was some drama in Ottawa. He had grown out of favor with that team. And it's not his fault, but it is what it is. So he wanted to leave, and he goes to Florida to play with his brother. They bring him in. They need a goaltender. Bobrovsky's gone. They bring in Jacob Markstrom from the New Jersey Devils. I think that's a lateral move. I think Markstrom is good. So we'll see how that goes. They bring in some feistiness. Garnet Hathaway, bottom six forward, but I love the way that guy plays. He fits Florida's game to a T. He's a jerk. He plays 100% every single shift. He gets under your skin, but he also puts in some goals every once and again. Like he's a decent player. And they get Akira Schmid from Vegas to be a good backup. That's about it. Oh, they bring in Radko Gudas too and Lars Eller to just round out the dirtbag persona that they have in Florida. Radko Gudas, friend of the show, by the way, who was just a really super nice guy, but on the ice, you would not want to cross him because he's that guy. So the Florida Panthers, after having a down year, absolutely retool. And when you look at this roster, the meat is out east. Like every single team in the east is loading up. You got Tkachuk. You got Tkachuk. You got Bennett. You got Gudas. You got Hathaway. Like these are some big, large human beings who are not afraid to throw their weight around. That first game with the Washington Capitals is going to be incredible. It's going to be much watch hockey. So which team is better? You obviously have the two-time Stanley Cup champion who had a down year. Can they bounce back? How healthy is Alexander Barkov? Where's Sam Bennett? Where's Anton Lundell and Lou Steinert? Does Brad Marchand still have legs? Those are all questions that we need answered. How is Brady Tkachuk going to fit into this mix? Is it going to be too – is it just too many personalities on this team for them to mesh together? Like, is Sam Reinhart going to continue to be the unheralded hero on this team? I think he will. But Florida Panthers are retooled. Are they better than the Washington Capitals? I'm going to reserve my opinion until I see them play. Zach Blatt, 100%, is Seth Jones back up and running? This is a very veteran-laden team who has played a lot of hockey, and everybody seems to have had major injuries. And any one of them can go down at any given second because they play a very physical, very in-your-face style of hockey. So until they can prove to me that they can stay healthy and they can stay consistent, I don't know if I can trust them. But they have done a hell of a job this offseason to retool this team, to retool this roster. One that you thought, okay, you know, they made their three Stanley Cups. That's it. They're going to take a back seat. There's other teams in the conference, the Carolina Hurricanes, who are going to come up and take that mantle. Not so fast. Getting Brady Tkachuk, as much as I hate it, because the idea of making super teams in the NHL, it just bothers me. You know, we've seen it in basketball. We've slightly seen it in football. We definitely seen it in baseball with the Los Angeles Dodgers going out and signing everybody and paying luxury tax up the yin-yang. They don't care. And now we're sort of seeing it in the NHL. And maybe this is a deeper conversation to have, but is this a good thing? And do players have too much power? Because in a sense, in the NBA, the GMs do nothing. The players make their teams. The players can dictate where they go. You see it right now in the LeBron James case. The players are selling to get LeBron. It's not the GMs doing the work. It's the Steph Currys trying to say, hey, come on, come play for us. And there's a Kyrie Irving saying, oh, come on, come on, play for us. And maybe the GMs are, you know, behind the scenes saying certain things to the agents. But essentially, the players have become the GMs in basketball. And they play together and they are on the, you know, the USA national team or whatever national team. And they say, let's do this. Let's form a team. You saw it with the Miami Heat, and it happens year after year after year. Guys meet up and they go, okay, we got to form a super team. How do we do this? And I don't want that to happen in hockey. I like guys who play for one franchise for their whole career. I think that is endearing. I think that is just something that is dying. And I think hockey is the last bastion of hope for players to say, this is my franchise, I'm staying here. Like a guy like Dylan Larkin. He's played in Detroit his whole career. Do you think he's going to cut bait and leave? Hell no. That guy's going to be in Detroit for his career, and you got to commend him for that. But in all seriousness, I don't like this. So Brady Tkachuk going to Ottawa, and he has a full no-move clause and saying, I want to be traded, and I'll give you one team. It doesn't sit well with me. But this is the culture we live in. This is the time, baby. And the players have all the power. Do I like it? No. Do I think it makes for great entertainment? Yes. But the disparity between the teams is just going to continue to grow. The gap is going to continue to grow because now essentially you have a super team in Florida. You have like their first line of Reinhardt, Barkov, and Tkachuk is fantastic. Their second line of Verhaeghe, Bennett, and Tkachuk is fantastic. Their third line of Lusterainen and Lundell and Marchand is really, really good. So those are three very dangerous lines that they can roll out there. And you would think that would maybe factor into the back end. No, they got Forsling and Ekblad and Mikkola and Jones and Kulikov and Gudas. That's good, man. That's really, really good. All right, moving on. We'll stay in Florida and we'll finish up in Toronto. The Tampa Bay Lightning, excuse me. You know, the big thing was Darren Radish. This guy came out of nowhere, lit the world on fire. Norris Trophy candidate, scored a million points. He jettisoned and went to Toronto. I think the writing was on the wall. He wanted to go home and play in Toronto. One of the few people who wants to go to Toronto. What do they do? How do they fill this hole? They need someone to quarterback the power play. They don't really have anybody. Victor Hedman's always hurt, and he's really not that guy anymore. Who's it going to be? Well, they go out and get John Carlson. And they sign him to a two-year, $17 million contract, $8.5 million per. It's a great deal. This guy goes to Anaheim, doesn't resurrect his career. Further glorifies his career, leads them to the playoffs. One of the surprise, not even a surprise. I don't know why I keep saying that. The guy was dynamite when he was with Washington. Then he goes to Anaheim and he's dynamite when he goes to Anaheim. And now he gets to go to Tampa Bay and quarterback arguably the best power play in the entire NHL. And what is his point total going to be? Point per game? I don't see why not. This guy could easily win the Norris Trophy. Look at what Darren Radish did in Tampa Bay. And I'm not slighting Darren Radish that much. Yes, he's got a cannon for a shot, but this guy went from getting 20, 30 points to getting 80 points. You're telling me you can't take a John Carlson, who's only 36 years old, by the way, and put him on that power play. This is a John Carlson who has put up 71, 75, 70, 70 points in his career. And you put him on the most lethal power play in the entire NHL, and he doesn't put up 82 points. I'm taking the over on that. So they pick up John Carlson. What else do they do? And then they sign some secondary people. Then, you know, they sign Ilya Makeyev. They get Jeffrey Vial from Anaheim. I love this guy. This guy plays hockey the right way. He fights, he hits, he's, you know, shows up on the score sheet every once in a while. But other than that, they didn't have to do too much. Much like the Florida Panthers, these guys, they just need to stay healthy. They're another veteran-laden team who's won championships that just need to stay healthy so they can do their damage in the playoffs. They got Kucherov on the last year of his deal. They got Point. They got Gensel. They got Hagel. They got Cirelli. So they have the tools and the pieces. The keys are, can Victor Hedman play? Where's his head at? Where's his body at? He's 35 years old. Like he's obviously ailing. Hopefully he's having a good summer and he can come back 100%. John Carlson, where's he going to be at? Where's his body going to be like? Eric Chernak, Ryan McDonough. Can these four guys log the type of minutes that they're going to need them to log to be a successful hockey team? This is where the huge question mark lies with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Can the defense hold up? Your average age is 30 years old. You're going to play the piss out of Carlson, Hedman, Chernak, and McDonough. Average age of those guys is 35. So that's not encouraging if I'm a Tampa Bay coach, a Tampa Bay player, a Tampa Bay fan. You need to find some youngsters to spell those guys, to just give them a break. And obviously on the back end, you got Vasilevsky, you bring in Dennis Hildeby with the Nick Paul trade. He goes to Toronto. They have some cap space. They have some holes, but this is the Tampa Bay Lightning, and you know they'll make some moves. Julien Brisebois, probably not done. I see him bringing in maybe another top nine forward to help out the depth and maybe trying to bring in a young defenseman to help these guys, because there is some issues there. I don't see them quite being at the Washington, Florida level when it comes to offseason additions and where I see them projecting in the regular season, but they're close. All right. Last but not least, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Obviously, last year, they stunk. They get the first overall pick. They get Gavin McKenna. Everything's right. They get the new coach. They get the new GM. Everything is just revamped, retooled. What are we doing here in Toronto? They're going for it. They bring in Sergei Bobrovsky. The biggest issue with this team, much like the Edmonton Oilers for years and years and years, has been goaltending. And maybe it hasn't been their biggest issue, but it's been one of the main issues. They can't get a goaltender to make a save at an opportune time. They've had good goaltenders. They've had guys who have gone on streaks where it's like, these are good goalies. This is it. We've got our answer. But then you get to the playoffs or you get to crunch time and the goalies just disappear. And it's like, okay, well, back to the drawing board. What do we do? Who do we get? Well, kudos to Chaika. He sees a need and he addresses it, and they bring in Sergei Bobrovsky. The most talented, you know, he's got the cups, he's got the individual awards, he's got everything you would want in a goaltender, except that he's old. And he has been trending downward for the last few years. And his regular seasons aren't that much better than the Anthony Solars and the Hildebees and the Joseph Walls and all of these guys that Toronto has been playing for the last few years. But they don't need him to be good in the regular season. They don't need him to be anything special in the regular season. They sign this guy to win in the playoffs. Much like a baseball team brings in a closer, a Mariano Rivera. They don't care what he does in the regular season. When it's the bottom of the ninth and we're up by one and we're playing the Boston Red Sox, I need you to strike out three guys in the playoffs. That's all I need. So they can get through the regular season. They can split time, Stolarz and Bobrovsky. I don't care if you play Stolarz more. When it comes playoff time and we need to win a game seven or a game six, Bob needs to show up. So that's what they're signing him for. I could care. They don't care what he does in the regular season. They're signing him for his experience and his cold, calm demeanor and his rock, solid, steely look when he's between the pipes. That's what they're signing him for. So they check that box. We got Gavin McKenna. We got Anthony Stolar, or Sergei Bobrovsky, excuse me. Now what do we need? We need some grit. You know, a new team. We got the high-end talent. We got to get some grit who can play, who is maybe won Stanley Cups. Nick Paul, check. They get him from the Tampa Bay Lightning. This guy obviously grew up in the Ontario area, played juniors in Ontario. He's a Canadian guy, won World Juniors. He's going back home to Toronto. He's going to be super, super excited to go home. He's going to be motivated. I like the signing. He's a big body. He kills penalties. He scores opportune shorthanded goals in the playoffs like crazy. If he were to bury half of his chances, the guy would be a 35-goal scorer. He gets chances all the time just because he has a really quick stick. He's really tenacious on his forecheck, and he just seems to be around the puck all the time. So they get Nick Paul. They bring in Brandon Duhaime. Good, solid, rugged forward. Probably a fourth liner, but he can throw the mitts. He can maybe get on the second line, third line if you're in a pinch. But he is just an energetic player, played for the Minnesota Wild. Good player. Bring in Zach MacEwen. If you need a nuclear option, not that he's a nuclear option, but he's a tough guy. Friend of the show. Good pickup there. And then the big one is we need a better power play. You know, Mitch Marner was our quarterback on the power play for years. We obviously let him go to Vegas, and he almost won the Conn Smythe and a Stanley Cup. Thank goodness he didn't. But who do we got? Morgan Riley? It's not going to cut it anymore. We need someone to quarterback the power play, and we're going to fleece Tampa Bay again. And fleece is a strong word, but we're going to get Darren Radish. He's not going to re-sign in Tampa Bay. Let's get him. And we sign him to a big ticket. Did we oversign? Potentially. But I don't know if $8.5 million is the same as it was two, 3 years ago. It's a different world. The salary cap is $100 million. This is less than 10% of the cap for a potential 1A defenseman that'll be on your team for the next 8 years. It ain't that bad of a deal when you look at it like that. This is the guy who put up 70 points last year. 70 points for the Tampa Bay Lightning. That ain't bad. And he's got a cannon for a shot, and he's not terrible defensively in his own zone. And you can limit the ice time of a guy like Morgan Riley, who, in my opinion, has lost a step. Is he still a very valuable defenseman? Hell yeah. But now he gets second pairing minutes. You can go Jake McCabe, Darren Radish. You can go Morgan Riley, Chris Tanev. You can go OEL and whoever they put out with him. That's a solid six. That's a solid six who kind of does a little bit of everything. Defensive specialist in Chris Tanev. You got a really good two-way defenseman in Jake McCabe. You have a power play specialist in Darren Radish. You have a really solid defenseman in Morgan Riley. And an Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who's just turned into one of the jack of all trades. You need a 1A power play guy, he's your guy. Not forever, but he can do it for a little bit. Need a like kind of a prick veteran who's just going to slash guys and, you know, send a message? That's him. You need a guy who's just going to sit out for a couple games. That's him. When I played with him in Arizona, I didn't realize he was going to be able to transition into this type of player. He was just a high-end Erik Karlsson-type defenseman when I played with him in Arizona. Now he's great. Like, he's really rounded out his play. And the older he gets, the more mature he gets, just the better he sees the game and the better he plays the game. So he's fantastic as a 5-6 defenseman. And then up front, obviously there's issues. Who are we going to get to play with Austin Matthews? Where are the goals going to come from? Where is Gavin McKinnon going to slot in? What are we going to do with our effort level? Is Austin Matthews able to lead this forward group anywhere? Does he have that kind of chutzpah? I don't think he does. I really don't. I think Johnny T is going to have to pick up the bootstraps and say, this is my team again. We have to do this. But the talent is there. You bring in a Teddy Bluger. You got a Nick Paul. You bring in a Colton Sissons, who friend of the show, Jay Anderson, says is the best centerman in hockey, which is crazy. Brandon Duhaime, you have talent. Easton Cowan, will they give them an opportunity? Give him an opportunity on the first line. They bring in Jack Roslovic. They have players who can move around the roster. So much like the Washington Capitals, the Toronto Maple Leafs will make the playoffs. And I see them as a Stanley Cup contender. But how this group meshes, how this group goes together with new coach Jim Hiller and his systems, very defensive-minded, very passive. We're not going to run and gun. We're going to wait for our turn. We're going to be a counter-puncher type team. Will they be able to do that? I don't know. But we'll wait and see. Hopefully no, because then I can just thrash them. But what they've done this offseason, as critical I was about the John Chaika Ching Ching Cha hiring, the guy's done pretty good work. Goaltending issue? Check. Back-end issue, power play guy? Check. Depth up front? Check. It obviously helps to get the number one overall pick in Gavin McKenna if he can play like the other number one overall picks for the last 3-4 years. They got a 50, 60, 70 point guard score right there. You put him on the second line with Tavares and Nylander. You got Matthew Nyes, Austin Matthews, and Easton Cowan. It's a hell of a first line. Then you got Bluger and Joshua and Paul and Duhaime and Sissons and Cowan and McEwen. You have pieces that you can make this into a really solid hockey team. So we'll see where it goes. But the East is reloaded. It's very exciting. I think everybody's done a really good job this offseason. And Tom Duggan of the Carolina Hurricanes, kudos. Good on you. I like it. And I just think it takes a big set of balls to do that. And you said, I'm going for it. Just like I'm going for this podcast. And I'm done now. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I appreciate the support. We'll be back later this week for another episode. Keep having some fun. We'll talk to you later. Cheers.